Welcome to Maximum Resilience with me, Kelly Bazzani, as we go on this epic journey of how to own your power and the steps to take that lead you towards an incredible life of maximum resilience. This educational, powerful, engaging, and inspiring show will change your perception of addiction while we revolutionize the approach that ensures mental health as we address a worldwide epidemic. Let's shift the paradigm promoting mental and emotional wellness. We do recover. Experience the transformation from addiction to living your best life. Here's the secret: to learn how to master unleashing your full potential every day in every way. Maximum resilience starts now.
Hey everyone, I get the honor and the pleasure of opening this show. This is actually Maximum Resilience with Kelly Bazzani, but it's a very, very special show today. God, I'm getting all teared up and I haven't even started yet. Today's show is two sides of the addiction coin. This is a mother and daughter's stories of strength and hope and a new perspective. Now, many of you have heard me talk about the addiction rates, the alcohol rates, the online buying, but very few people do what we're about to do today and what you're about to see today. I want to introduce you to two people. Kelly, of course, you know. Amazing. How do I describe her? She is one of the most sought after thought leaders on the planet when it comes to resilience. As a matter of fact, she's listed in the top 10. And her coaching platform is unprecedented. Today's show is going to tell you why. You know, outside of a master's degree for psychology, there's something that makes her more qualified to talk about resilience than any letters behind her name, my name, or anybody's name. You're going to hear it today. Today, you're going to hear what the journey of addiction is like. But not just from her perspective, we're joined by a beautiful, beautiful soul, the courage of this woman, Pamela Bazzani, the courage of this woman to come on this show and join her daughter in a candid, open conversation of how you go from despair to love, how you can share a story and a life. And what shows through more than anything is the absolute utmost respect, appreciation. Today, get ready to hear two sides of the addiction coin. Kelly is going to start us off with the way we usually start off the conversation when we're talking about our strength, experience, and hope. Kelly, you ready?
I am.
I know. I don't know what happened to me already.
Thank you, Dr. Pat. And hi, Mom. And thank you. Yeah, so thank you, Dr. Pat. That was something. And I'm in such gratitude to you, as always, for giving me this platform to speak. And you have been such a mentor to me, both on the show and in my recovery. You teach me every day. So we are going to start with the serenity prayer, all three of us. And so let's start with that.
Yeah. Go.
God, grant me the serenity
to accept
the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the
things, I can, and the
wisdom to know the difference.
Kelly, let's start off. Before we go into the beautiful conscious conversation that you and your mom are going to have today. And Pamela, I can't thank you enough for being here. I don't think you truly understand how important this is to people in recovery, but I think you will have a sense of it after the show. Let's start off, Kelly, as we always do, with sharing your story of strength, hope, and all your and the full body of your experience, if we could.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about that, Dr. Pat, as you said, you know, in the beginning of the show, let's start with like, you know, a 3 to 5 minute story. And so I've been reflecting on that the last couple of days. My mother and I have been having conversations about what we wanted this show to bring to people. And I'm like, how do I tell my story in a 5 minute conversation with everybody to really have an impact? And I thought I can't. But what I can do is kind of bring you on a journey with me. And then my mother and I can, with, you know, you leading us, share our story of strength and hope. And so I can start by saying, when I was reflecting on this, I've always had an addictive personality, even before I started drugs and alcohol. And I can say that by growing up, even my thought process was addictive. You know, even growing up when I was practicing for sports teams, we had a basketball hoop in front of our house. And I would stay outside until I perfected my free throws, until I perfected. My mom would say, honey, come inside. I'm like, no, not until I get 15 in a row, 15 in a row. So I always had that addictive personality. I never felt good enough at what I did. I'd score 25 points in a game when everyone scored 8 and it wasn't good enough. I needed to score 30 the next time. And so reflecting on that, it started for me in high school when I was putting vodka in my Snapple bottles in school. I went to a Catholic all-girls high school. I was so privileged to do that. I had a 4.0. I was playing on 3 sports teams. I was MVP of all of those sports teams, but I was suppressing my perfectionism with alcohol. I went on to nursing school. I was president of the College Council of Nursing Schools, but I had to move home with my parents my sophomore year because I was drinking too much. And I knew that I was. And I think that was my hardest thing, was like, how could I be at the top of my nursing school? How can I be president of the College of Nursing School, but having to move home with my parents? And so that's, for me, was where the shame started, where I started burying that for myself. And I knew my parents started to notice at that point, but I didn't want to talk about it. And so there I started to build that untrust with myself. I graduated nursing school. I worked at Mayo Clinic, which was unheard of, going in as a critical care nurse at Mayo Clinic, which is the top hospital you can possibly work at. But I was drinking. I was waking up with the shakes. I was coming home. The first thing I thought about, as you read about, you know, I was either thinking about drinking, recovering from drinking. I was at the standard of nursing at 25. I was heart trained, stroke trained. And then I broke my back at 26, lifting a patient. It ended my nursing career. I couldn't walk. All the nerves, I was in a wheelchair on my parents' front porch. I moved home with them. And that started for me the spiral. And I just want to make it clear that I never stopped drinking. Everyone was like, wow, you stopped drinking 15 years ago. No, I didn't. I told myself, like, wow, I can just switch to pills. I won't have a hangover. I won't smell like alcohol the next day. I can hide it, because I was hiding from myself, so that my parents had to watch me go through getting addicted to pain medication and hiding that. So that, you know, I realized then, was I taking the pain medication for actual pain, or was I taking it to hide those feelings of shame and depression and anxiety? So that set me on the course of 8 spinal surgeries, you know, losing the feeling in my legs, not being able to go back to nursing, losing that identity of nursing. So having to redefine who I was as a person, that set me on the course of, why aren't my friends talking to me anymore? What's wrong with them? Don't they know that I'm the one that needs help right now? My parents started to distance. So then I started to make the poor choices, right? I would come home, the bills were on the table. I can't deal with that right now. I was just existing. Made poor choices of getting behind the wheel of a car when I was on pills, DUI after DUI, having to face the consequences of my poor choices. Went to jail twice, maximum security jails. In that jail was where I found my life purpose. And I just want to be really clear on that, because when I went in there, I was judging my cellmate. She was in there for first degree murder. And I was like, I'm only in here for DUIs. And that is when I had my spiritual awakening of my higher power saying to me, if you would have hit a child or you would have hit a family, you'd be in here doing the same amount of time. So what makes you any better? And, you know, they say in recovery, you know, you have to do a personal house cleaning. And that is when I decided to dedicate the rest of my life doing this work. And it didn't stop for me there. You know, I came out, I was on an ankle monitor for 30 days. Then I was on an ankle monitor for another 30 days. And this was all while I was trying to get my master's degree. I was on an ankle monitor in my master's degree, but I found different ways of trying to do what I needed to do. I was sexually assaulted in jail. I had to deal with all those emotions. So little by little, I opened that Pandora's box and started dealing with alcohol and drugs are but a symptom of what was underneath. So I had to deal with all the emotions of shame, all the emotions of trauma, all the emotions of that. And I, one day at a time, started working through those. We'll talk about this in our segments, but you know, you get ready to start making amends, but not everybody is ready to accept those amends. So if you're making your recovery about getting the validation of others, that's why you relapse. So I made my recovery about me being in acceptance of myself and just doing it one day at a time. So, you know, a lot of my recovery story, and my mother and I will talk about it today, is I can't think of one thing I didn't go through. I've been through death in my recovery, death of my fiance. I've been through death of my grandparents. I've been through breakups of the loves of my lives. I've been through, you know, getting even in recovery, not being able to proceed with careers because I've been on formal probation and I've had to pivot. So there's been so many things that have happened, and rebuilding of relationships with my parents, my family, setting boundaries. So there's so much, Dr. Pat, and I'm so curious to hear my mother's perspective. Yeah. Because I don't know, you know, yeah. I was so selfish and self-centered in my disease that I was like, they're doing it to me instead of, or life's happening to me. And now I'm so happy to say, no, life was happening for me to give me the opportunity to be where I'm at today.
That's why we're calling this show Two Sides of the Addiction Coin, because I'm not kidding, Pamela. When you have a mother and a daughter so beautifully willing to have this conversation, this will save lives. Pamela, I'd love to hear from you now that you've heard, I'm sure, a very abbreviated version. Of course it is. I'd love to know your thoughts. And thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Pat. I'm so happy to be here. And my reason to be here is to give hope to other people who are going through addiction or families in addiction. I just had to start with this one quote. I look at Bible verses every morning, and usually they're exactly what's pertaining to my life at that moment. So this one was truly divine intervention. It came from St. Paul's letter to the Corinthians. I sound like I'm conducting a mass, but this is what he says. I am out of my mind to talk about this. I am more. I have worked much harder. I have been exposed to death again and again. I have been in prison. I have been in danger in the city by false brothers. I was beaten with rods. I have been constantly on the move. I have gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst and have gone without food. If I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. I delight in weakness and in hardships, for when I am weak, then I am strong. When I read that verse, I immediately thought of Kelly's obstacles and challenges she has experienced and overcome. She's been through all of the things in that verse, if you can imagine. And now she's at the point in her life where she can boast of the things that showed her weakness. Miracles do happen. There's hope. I always felt we had the perfect family growing up. The five of us, beautiful family. I was quick to judge other people when I was raising my own children. If I saw a problem in another family with alcohol or drugs, I would say, there's got to be a problem with those parents. There's got to be some dysfunction in that household, or these poor kids would not be like that. They just didn't raise their children in the right way, or they wouldn't find themselves in this nightmare. My brother told me never to judge anyone else, because someday I might find myself in the same position. And many years later, his words were true. I always felt, as a mother, my main job was to protect my children. If they hurt themselves, I'd patch it up, I'd kiss it, I'd make it better. If someone hurt their feelings, I was right out there, my claws coming out, I was going to help them. If they were dealing with things that they weren't quite sure of, I would sit down and talk to them about it. My journey with Kelly made it very clear to me that I could no longer make things all better. And as a mother, that was devastating for me. I couldn't help her. I was hopeless. I walked through this whole experience in kind of a catatonic state and constant fear. She came back to our home to recuperate from her surgeries, and it was like a bad dream. I was locking up pills. I was calling sponsors. I was checking on her. I'd come in the room in the morning and I'd lean down and I'd see if she was breathing, you know, because I couldn't see any life in there. I'd put my ear down, you know, I'd pet her head just to make sure she was warm. I knew she hadn't gone to the bathroom in a few days. She hadn't gotten out of the bed. I'm thinking her organs are shutting down. My work at that time was my only escape. And I immersed myself in it.
You have just what you just shared. And I want to get to you, Kelly, in a minute. But what you just shared, Pamela, is going to resonate so deeply with the parents and the children that see this and watch this. Because rarely do we get that perspective, you know, a mother's perspective, you know, the perspective where, you know, this is your child who you love. And you're wondering if she's still breathing. And yet the other side of that is, you know, there's a saying, the agony and the ecstasy. Recovery is about the agony and the agony right out front. You get to the ecstasy later on, right? But this is where everybody gets real. Kelly, from your perspective, when you hear your mom, Pamela, talk about this, you know, I don't know how that doesn't hit you smack in the heart, right?
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And it's just, you know, hearing that perspective, I'm so happy for my mother that she's able to talk about this. And it's so fascinating from the addict perspective. And I want all the people in addiction to hear it, because selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of our problem. From my perspective, I'm thinking, where's my mom? You know, I want her, you know, why can't she see that I'm having these back surgeries and, you know, I'm not seeing in my addiction the pain that I'm putting my family through. because we're so narrow-minded on what is in front of us that we're not seeing that it is a family disease. It is affecting everybody in our family. And I remember when I was clear, my father, you know, I'm like, dad. And he's like, look at your mother. She is like catatonic over here. And I'm like, well, it's not about her. It is about her. It's about everybody that it's affecting. When my mother has to, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm just going to go out on the couch and fall asleep, you know, 30 Valiums in and 40 Narcos in. I'm not realizing that my mother's coming out and checking to see if I'm breathing.
Right.
You know, my counselor is saying to me, like, were you ever suicidal? I'm like, no, I'm offended that she's asking me that. Well, when you're taking 70 pills every night, yes, you are suicidal because you don't know if you're going to wake up the next morning and your family is witnessing that. So thank you, Mom, for that perspective for families, you know, because you're out there running amok, as they say, and you don't realize who it's impacting every minute of every day. So yeah, it does hit me, every word that she's saying, yes.
And, you know, let's get to this other thing, Kelly, before we hop back to Pamela, before we hop back to your mom. One of the things that I want to talk about here for all of us is, and especially for people in recovery, is how victimized you feel. How you feel like the entire world's against you. How it's like, how dare you not understand what I'm going through? How dare you not get this? And thank you for bringing up, thank you for using the word suicide, because I want to say one thing and then I want you to roll with this for a minute and we'll go back to you, Pam, in a second. But these feelings of victimization do not help the people around us that care for us. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, it's not even understood. And you're going to share that here. But thank you for talking about suicide, because I want to say one thing. What you read, what you see in the movies, the violent nature of it, that is not what we're talking about. We're talking about something that is so insidious. Like maybe you're thinking, well, I didn't do that, but wait a minute. Maybe that's not you, but let's talk about something else. Maybe you are driving down a highway on a motorcycle at 110 miles an hour. And you've just had a few. Yeah. Okay. So I want to be clear about this because Kelly, you did a beautiful job talking about the insidious nature of this. Now, what caused or what happened where you felt the whole world is against me? Because part of that is the ism. The other part is that real feelings, right?
Yes. And it is, you know, they talk about, you know, the ism of, It's a mental obsession and a physical allergy, right? And so I started to think, you know, and I wrote about this because it's like, everyone's against me. Nobody understood me. And so you feel powerless over the addiction, your life, your circumstances, because I felt normal on the medications. You know, everyone's like, you need to stop using. Right. And my mom, I see my mom's face right now. She's like, Kelly, you have a problem. And I'm like, Mom, no, honestly, like I feel normal on the, if I was to get off the medications, so people start distancing themselves from you and they almost feel repulsed. And my mom, I know my mom's going to mention this, right? I was like a Johnny One Note. You know, my mom's like, you need to start doing something. No, my back hurts. My back hurts. But the impulsivity of like getting behind the wheel of a car, like you talk about, my last accident, my hood flew up and my airbag went off and I drove 20 minutes to an AA meeting. I got arrested in front of an NA meeting and got out like I was going to secretary the meeting. To me, that felt normal, Dr. Pat.
That's right. That's why I wanted you to share it, Kelly.
That's the mental obsession of my addiction and the physical allergy that if I didn't have it, my body was not going to feel normal, but that's the mental state I was operating in. And I wondered why my friends and family were like, boundary, boundary, boundary. And I was like, it's them. I'm not the common denominator. I'm not. It's them. Everybody else has the problem, not me. So I just want to make that really clear here, you know, that I didn't realize how much that was affecting every. Can you imagine having a conversation with me back then? Oh. But well, my mom will talk about it.
Kelly would say, "Mom, can I come over?" And I think, oh, it was sheer dread. Sheer dread. Kelly, when were you thinking, "Well, I'd like to come over today"? All right, Kelly. She would come in. I'd look at her. She'd sit opposite me at the counter. And I'd look at her. And I'd look deep in her eyes. And there was nobody there.
Yeah.
There was no one home.
Yeah.
And I'd fix her favorite things. She didn't eat. Her head would hang. There was no conversation. I'd ask her a question. There'd be no response. There was no emotion one way or another. No smiles, no tears, nothing. My baby wasn't there anymore. She just wasn't. I remember calling Kelly's sponsor and saying, "Is she going to make it?" And she said, "I don't know." When Kelly left my house, I'd say to my husband, is she going to make it home? Is she going to be dead? We'd get into our bedroom. It'd be like, is she going to die tonight? Every night, waiting for the phone to ring to get that call. I can't explain how really horrible it was. But the reason I want to is for people out there who I know are going through this same thing right now. And Kelly would repeatedly say, "What's the matter, Mom? Why aren't you talking to me, Mom? You're really bothering me, Mom. Why are you making a face like that, Mom?" So finally I said to her, "Kelly, let me ask you something. What do you want from me?" And she said, "I just want you to tell me I'm proud of you." And I said, "Well, that's not going to happen because I'm not. But when the day comes, if it ever comes, I'll be the first one to tell you how proud I am of you."
I want to take a short break. I want to take a short break when we come back, because you all hear in this program, tough love, that's it right there. See, this is it. This is the place where you're hearing the strength. You're hearing the experience, strength, and hope of Kelly Bazzani and Pamela Bazzani, her mom. And both of these amazing women are coming forward because both of them realize the crisis we are in. And if these conversations are not shared so that a door can open between another mother and daughter, another father and son, another mother, father, daughter, son, whatever that is, because in addiction, all the doors close. We don't know how to talk. And Kelly, you said it right. You know, from your perspective, so many emotions. It's hard to explain what they are. And it's also hard to explain what's you and what's the drug.
Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to take a really, really short break. Basically 30 seconds, we're going to be back. Kelly's going to take us on a journey of what was underneath that. The moments of nodding off, you know, not being there, the desire to be with her mom, even though she knew she wasn't really there. Was it for reaching out for help? Was it something that an addict can't possibly even understand about themselves? Or was it like we call in the program, a higher power, a God of our understanding, just sticking her in front of Pamela? Let's take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back.
Are you feeling lost in this journey we call life? When you awaken the truth of your patterns, limitations, and beliefs, you can start to heal relationship with yourself, others, and your circumstances. I'm Ritika Rose, life coach, author, and speaker. My mission is to help you align with your most powerful, authentic self and transform how you experience your inner and outer world. Find the confidence and peace to live the highest version of your life. Visit RitikaRose.com.
Take control over your future. I'm Lisa Belts, and I'm here to help you realize your true potential and become unshakable. Schedule a completely free introductory coaching session with me now to see for yourself how I work. Get the divine guidance that you need to transform your life for the better. Go to lisabelts.com and take that step towards transformation. That's LYSABELTZ.com.
Do you feel like love is just taking you for a ride? If you struggle to find yourself in a fulfilling romantic relationship, join me, Love Coach Mariah, in my show, Becoming Secure in Love, From Push and Pull to Peace of Mind, every second and fourth Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Discover the joy of being loved as your true, authentic self. Visit LoveCoachMariah.com for more. That's LoveCoachMariya.com.
Damayanti, where you can find a special gift for that special person. Or perhaps that special person is you. Our collections include messages in sacred Sanskrit of love, fearlessness, divine energy, and strength, made in America and shipped directly from us to you. Damayanti is the place to find a soul message unique to you, designed for your life journey. Go to damayanti.store now to find the special mantra that speaks to your soul.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's so awesome that you're tuning in and turning on to Maximum Resilience. I'm Dr. Pat. I have the honor of taking this journey with both Kelly Bazzani and Pamela Bazzani, her mom. This is two sides of the addiction coin. These are the conversations that you wish somebody would have had with you, or you'd seen somebody have, or you heard someone have. But these are the conversations that create an entire energy of forgiveness, love, contemplation, all hopefully without regret. But I know that that is a challenge in itself. Kelly, before we kind of go forward here, I would love for people to know what you're doing now, how they can find you.
Yes, absolutely. So they can find me at www.myresiliencecoach.com. And we are expanding, which is super exciting. I just got two speaking engagements because I'm starting to speak in middle schools, educating them early on recovery and mindfulness and things like that. So we have a beautiful speaking page up on the website of how to book me for that. You can find our shows on our media page, and you can book one-on-one appointments or group coaching packages. All that good stuff. So www.myresiliencecoach.com.
All right. Look, we're going to flip the coin a little bit, maybe toss it up in the air, let it kind of move by its own. Because one of the misconceptions that people have is my daughter, my son, or my mother, Pamela, enters into a program. I don't care what you want to call it, whether it's AA, NA, or a private program. But off they go to recovery. And when they come home, we're going to be all good again. Now, this next phase of the conversation is the road to recovery. There are two sides to that coin too. I want to get right at it because, you know, we talked a little bit about just briefly a few experiences, but usually there is a thing that happens where somebody is like, okay, I'm in recovery now. Everybody's got their own thing, right? You know, we all go through the pathway where we realize I am a mess. Kelly, let's start with you. What was your thing?
So I had a couple recoveries. I went to one recovery for my alcohol and I came back. I remember that was, you know, St. Helena. That was, wow, I get to make friends. I came out, my mom and dad were there attending the, you know, support. And I was like, Mom, Dad, hey. And they were like, you know, my second recovery was during, you know, Christmas and New Year's. And my parents chose not to speak to me during that one, validatedly so. My third and final rehab was the turning point for us. And I had gotten in an accident in front of my mom's place of employment, a big accident. And I thought, oh, she won't know about that, you know. And that is another thing, you know, we lie so much to ourselves. God, we are so manipulative in our addictions. And so I got there and I said, I'm going to call my mom and tell her I'm here for the Board of Nursing. The Board of Nursing sent me here. So that's how I'm going to get out of this one. And I called and I said, hey, Mom, I'm detoxing so bad. I'm here for the Board of Nursing. I just wanted to let you know I'm here for 45 days. And I'll let my mom share her perspective. But she said, I know you were in the paper again. And we had just had this lovely conversation on the beach in Santa Barbara about a month prior. And she said, if this happens again, your father and I are done. So I'll let my mom share her perspective on what happened there.
Yeah. And, you know, we call these, what do we call these? The rose colored glasses, the rose colored clouds, the pink cloud, right? So when people hear us talk about the pink cloud, it is really that initial like, yay, I'm fixed, I'm cured. Mom or Pamela, what was it like for you, right?
I never really felt that Kelly was cured at the beginning. I never believed her. We went to meetings. I watched her during the meeting. She was high. She was nodding off. Everybody noticed. And I thought, why am I even here? You know, what am I supporting? I don't know. There were many car accidents that occurred while I was at my employment. The last one was a huge one. And I got up in the morning and I read, it was on the front page of our paper. Local woman hits, I don't know whether I should say exactly what.
Okay, Mom, I'll say what you mean.
12 cars on a street. And I thought, I don't even want to read any further. I know. I just know. And here it was, Kellyanne Bazzani. And I'm thinking, oh my God. And I drove to work that morning. And all along the street were the cars that had been hit. And drawn around each car was red paint. 12 cars. I got into my work that day. I don't even know the words. I can tell you how I was. I had a big sign on my desk saying my title with my name, which I immediately put face down and waited for the reactions of the people in the community. No one, I guess, out of courtesy to me, said anything. I got through the day. I got home and I thought, she's never going to get well. How much more wreckage must you cause before you finally see you're not okay?
Kelly, that is a common question that our parents, our loved ones, any, let's just call it anybody that's close to us that even gives a you know what. Mm-hmm. That is the question they ask. And I must say, Pamela, I think underneath that, for a mom, but I don't want to speak for you, is how much more do you want to, or how much more are you going to do before you actually harm yourself, kill yourself or another? That's yeah. also underneath that, right?
Could I just say this one thing? On sure. this street where these cars were hit,
yeah.
every morning I would see a mother with her baby in the carriage, or an elderly person holding hands with his wife, or somebody pushing someone in the wheelchair. And I told Kelly this after, how blessed were you that those people were not there on that morning?
Wow.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that just came to me.
Thank you. Kelly, you heard that now. Now, yes. from an addict's perspective, that is not the remorse that we generally feel. What was your perspective?
My perspective, you know, I called, so that led up to the call, you know, that I was like, Mom, I'm in here because of nursing. You know, I was still, and my mom got on the phone and said, we got the paper. You remember our conversation we had in May? I'm done. I love you. Here's your dad. And my dad got on the phone and he said, you know, you heard your mom. I love you. And I'm done. And I can still hear that dial tone today. And I got off and I remember going back to my detox room and, you know, going into the corner and just sobbing like, but I still, you know, was lying to myself and everybody. I remember my counselor, you know, I just remember spitting off AA verses to her, like, I'm good. Until my other counselor came over and said, to your question, did you tell him about your eating disorder? Did you tell him about this? Did you tell him about your shame around this? And I looked at her and she said, I just saved your life. You're welcome. And I just started getting really honest in that rehab about everything underneath the drinking, the perfectionism, the shame, the guilt, I just started working through everything. And I remember calling my mother because it was my grandfather's 80th birthday when I was in rehab. And I said, I got a pass to come to Pop's 80th birthday. And she said, I don't think that would be a good idea for you to come. What do you mean? I'm 30 days clean. I don't think that would be a good idea. And I remember feeling so much resentment. Resentment being the number one offender in recovery, because we had all these family meetings in rehab and I was the only one without any family coming. And so that led us, you know, onto, I stayed for 45 days. And I just want to mention that for anybody who's thinking about recovery, you know, if you can do any kind of program longer than 30 days, you know, give yourself the gift of time, because 30 days for me was now, I was just starting to see clearly at 30 days. So 90, if you can do something 90 or go to some kind of, anyway, that's a whole different show for a whole different day. But I got out of recovery and my parents did not speak to me. Mm-hmm. And until my grandmother got ill at 90 days, my mother called me when I was 90 days clean and said, you know, Nanny's sick. And I said, oh, great. Do you want me there? She said, that is your choice. She yeah. still was very, and I showed up and we started rebuilding, but I wanted that approval. I wanted that acknowledgement. I, like my mom said, I wanted, and I'm like, well, I'm going to go to school. Well, I'm going to sign up for a master's program. Well, I'm going, she goes, that's good. But it wasn't. And I was always wondering like, what does she need? What, you know? So, but I was validating my worth and recovery on the approval of others, and that leads to so much relapse, because my sponsor would say to me, stop looking for oranges at the hardware store. You need to base your life around recovery, not recovery around your life. Because if you're doing it because you want your mom or your dad or whatever. So I just started work one day at a time. I walked up to the community college the day I got out of rehab. Everybody had laptops. I had the free backpack they gave me with an 89 cents notebook they gave me and a big pencil. And I did that. It was humility.
Yeah. And, you know, let's just talk about that because that is a pivotal point. And the pivotal point for both of you now is that many gut-wrenching days, many aha moments, yes, many looking yourself in the mirror and saying to yourself, you know, am I doing enough? Am I really changing? You know, Pamela looking and thinking, is she really changing? But I want to fast forward to where we are today, because those moments, they're awakenings, Kelly, for you.
Yes.
I mean, we've done shows and we'll continue to do shows on the recovery process, but this is the recovery of love process.
Yes.
Right? Because these are turning points. Now, from the turning point, you had to show up and demonstrate to the people that, oh, she's really changing her behavior here.
Yeah.
She had lunch and did nod off today.
Yes.
So this is the tipping point. Let's jump to that in the time we have left to really talk about how you both are even showing up here, why you got the resilience sign on there, why your mom is sitting there loving all over you today, because you made the decision to take this seriously, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that part now for the time we have left.
Yes, I think I chose to focus on me and not what my mom was thinking or what my dad was thinking. I thought my mom would tell me so many times, stop telling me, show me. And, you know, that says, you know, in recovery, we went on a rigorous course of action. And so that's what I did. And I just kept doing it at one day at a time, putting one foot in front of the other. And rent is due on my recovery every day. And I remember, you know, I would go over to my mom's and I would take off my sunglasses and just, you know, look at, and she goes, honey, you don't need to show me your eyes every time you come over, you know, but I just wanted to keep showing her and showing her and showing her. And so I did, you know, and I think from my perspective today, my mom doesn't have to worry about me today. She doesn't have to provide for me today. She knows I'm accountable for my life today. I can talk openly and vulnerably with her today. She's proud of the woman that I am. She can rely on me and depend on me to follow through with my commitments. If she says to me, for example, you know, Dad and I need to be at the airport at 6 a.m. We need you to be here at 5 a.m. I'm there at 5 a.m. So, you know, we learn and grow alongside each other today. She holds space when I tell her things from my past. So I think, you know, I felt so abandoned by my parents at the greatest time of need, you know, and now I look at it today and I'm like, thank God they did that for me at the time of my recovery, because it taught me how to be a woman.
Yeah.
You know, when they said we are done,
yeah,
I didn't have a penny to my name. I was unemployable. I was facing prison and I was like, I need to do something here, you know? So I went to my sponsors. She had me clean her house for rent money. I learned how to be accountable for myself. I worked my steps and my program. I put one foot in front of the other. Was it easy? No. But did I show up every day? That's all I did. I just showed up for myself every day, mm-hmm, and I went on a rigorous course of action. And I didn't do it self-will run riot, right?
Yeah.
Like, when they say higher power, I think people get really, oh, God. If your higher power has to be a doorknob when you start, right? If your higher power has to be nature, like, wow, that stream is greater than me, great. But I can't tell you how many times, mm-hmm, I tried to stop on my own. So I'd love to hear my mom's perspective on how she saw all that play out.
Yeah, I want to jump over to your mom because, Pamela, I think this is great to really bring this full circle now, because I think people don't understand how difficult it is to do with you and your husband. I think they hear this and they think, oh, mom is just angry and that's why she, no, right? Now I want to hear your perspective as we go full circle on this. Because anybody that's sitting here that think that that is easy for a mom or a dad to do, please think again. How was that for you, Pamela?
So many things are coming through my mind, Dr. Pat, and I know we only have a limited time, but I want to say, watching Kelly firsthand go through some of the things she went through, one thing I want to bring up was when she was in prison and she asked me to come, and I thought, I just can't do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. So I did it. And I came in, and you sit behind a mirror, and I wait for her to come out, and she's in a sling. And I said, "What happened to you, honey? Did somebody hurt you?" And she just looked at me because she couldn't say anything because there were guards in back of her. So we just said our things. I love you. I love you. I got out of there and I thought, the little baby girl who I've protected my whole life, somebody's abusing her. So I have to share that. I haven't even shared it with some of my friends and family, but I want to share it for the people out there in case they've gone through the same thing. But this is just one of the things my daughter has been through. And she rebuilt step by step, claw by claw. She pulled herself out of that hole. And she is who she is today. And my husband and I always tell her, "You're enough, Kelly." Every time, "I'm going to do this now. I think I'm going to do this now. You're enough." But what I want to tell you today, Kelly, and I can say wholeheartedly, I am so proud of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that, Pamela. And, you know, we'll be doing more shows on this. But the hardest thing, and Kelly, you know, let's talk to this, and Pam, to you. Wow, what courage to go into the prison. Believe me, I know what it's like to go and see a sponsee, and you never know what's going to show up and what to expect. But I don't know what it's like to see my daughter on the other side of that glass in a sling. I don't know the pain that you felt, the sense of powerlessness. See, that's what we know in the program. You know, these first couple of steps in the program, Kelly, right? You're powerless. I am powerless over this thing. So we don't talk enough about the people that are in our love circle and how they too are powerless, even more so, because you can't do anything but love. Well, let's just take these last moments left, Kelly, Pamela. I would love to hear each of your personal messages, and I cannot thank you enough. And then I'm going to end this with the promises, if that's okay.
Yes.
But I would love for you both to share your personal message, and I hope we will do this again. Kelly, do you want to start your personal message?
My personal message, Dr. Pat, is, you know, my hope and my strength, courage, and I'm sorry, I'm taking in my mom right now. My strength and hope and courage to everybody is, you know, I have learned that I took all that shame and I took all that guilt and everything, and I used it and I reframed it into providing hope and inspiration for people. And so I want everybody to know that I took all of my obstacles and I learned that it is my greatest unique gift now to the world. So I want everybody to know that it can be yours too. The things that we hide from people that we think are like, "Oh, nobody would understand that," or, "Oh, my past is so horrific," or, "Oh, I have taken that now and I use it as my truest unique gift to tell people my story," and it inspires. So please reach out and talk about it, because you never know who you will inspire and touch. Mm. Thank you, Mom, for being here.
Thank you. Pamela, what's your personal message? And thank you.
My personal message is, like I've always told Kelly, the hardest things that we have to go through in life, we wonder why. We wonder why. And what we find out is the why is so we can help someone else who's going through the same thing.
Yeah.
I am grateful I have gone through this so I can help another person. And this is by the grace of God too. I have to say my faith has been my stronghold.
I want to thank you both. And I want to end this with something that we know as the promises. In Alcoholics Anonymous, they're called the ninth step promises. And I will say this to both Pamela and Kelly. For some of us who have entered recovery, where we were so lost that even our sponsors agreed, we were too lost for even the big book. The greatest thing that ever happened to me was the task from my first sponsor to memorize these. And I want to share them with everyone. Because if you're not in this program, I guarantee you, Kelly, Pamela will tell you they apply to you. These are the promises. One, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor will we shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale you have gone, no matter how far down you have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That's what Pam just said. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. That's Kelly. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. That's all of you. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And this one, I always do last. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Thank you both for today.
Thank you, Dr. Pat.
Thank you, Lydia, for pushing all the right buttons. And thanks to all of you. You're going to be hearing more from Kelly about this. And know this, don't ever give up hope. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Maximum Resilience with me, Kelly Bazzani, your ally for addiction. Tune in the first Monday of each month at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on transformationtalkradio.com. Engage in this epic journey of how to own your power and the steps to take that lead you towards an incredible life of maximum resilience. We do recover. Experience the transformation from addiction to living your best life. For more information about Maximum Resilience and me, Kelly Bazzani, visit myresiliencecoach.com. That's myresiliencecoach.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.